tell people don't ever underestimate him because he's done some amazing things in his early life that I didn't think he would do. So I'm proud of him. Joe Cunningham.
I appreciate that, and thank you all so much for having me. You probably showed up here today and found out that a candidate for governor of South Carolina was going to be speaking. Probably wonder if I made a wrong turn somewhere along the lines. It's interesting. I was, as Dad said, I grew up in Catawba, graduated high school here, and it's good to be back here. It's good to be back here for the holidays and spending time on the water, spending time with family, and have my four-year-old back here as well. It's special, as you all, as parents know. You know, when you have your kids back, you want them to experience everything you experienced. And there's a lot of great things that I carry with me today from growing up in Western Kentucky and from having roots here. And I was speaking to a friend of mine who lives just south of Charlotte, but he grew up in Eddyville. And I was asking him, I was like, what's the best part about growing up in a small town? And he thought about it. He's like, probably you have to get along with each other. You know, there's a trait, there's a common trait with most people who grow up in small towns that you've got to be Christian-like, you've got to treat people with kindness and respect because you have to deal with them day in and day out. And that's not something that comes with growing up in larger cities. But there's a lot of my values and things that I learned growing up in Catawba, growing up in Lyon County, having family in Cadiz that I still carry with me today. And I just want to give you a little bit of background about where I've been so far, what I'm looking ahead to, because even though running for governor in South Carolina, I feel like what we're trying to present is something that people are craving all across this country, and that's new leadership, new people in office. And so when I ran for Congress I announced my first run in 2017, and I was running in a gerrymandered district that hadn't had a Democrat in 40 years. And at the time, Mark Sanford was the congressman who's the former governor of South Carolina. Y'all may know him because he went hiking on the Appalachian Trail, made national news through that. Mark has since become a good friend of mine, somebody that I respect. He made some mistakes. Very smart guy, you know, true Republican, tried and true, but smart and gets it. But Mark had to see at the time, and everybody looked at me when I decided to run, like, are you crazy? Like, do you have any money? I said, no. Do you have any name ID? I said, no. So I just want to try and make our country better. And I saw after President Trump was elected, I had took serious issues with the divisiveness and just the rhetoric. And I thought, this spirit of bipartisanship, bringing people together, even if we disagree on certain things, it should be the way forward. And so on election night back in 2018, the experts gave us a 9% chance of winning, just 9%. It ended up being the biggest upset in the entire country that evening. Even my parents didn't think I was going to make it, I don't think. And so it became the biggest upset. Well, in 2020, I then became the biggest target of the National Republican Party that would spend millions upon millions upon millions. And that's the bad side of politics. But I was able to get things done in Washington, D.C., which is rare, after serving just one term. In 2 years, I was able to get two of my bills through a divided Congress and get signed into law by President Trump. One of those bills was called the Great American Outdoors Act, which provides funds for what's called the Land and Water Conservation Fund. I know in South Carolina, every one of the counties has benefited from this fund, which acquires green spaces. I know there's some parks people in here. Acquires green spaces and helps upkeep them. So my bill, the Great American Outdoors Act, will permanently fund that so that future generations can have access to more and more green spaces, which is critically important. Another bill that I had passed into law was called the VA Telehearing Modernization Act, which is important for rural areas. Now, traditionally, if a veteran had their benefits denied, they would have to go in person and appear in person at the nearest town or city and appeal that claim. Now they can do that through the comfort of their own home on Zoom or online, just like we all conduct business through online as well. So I was able to get those bills done by working across the aisle. And I was voted the fourth most bipartisan and the fourth most effective member of Congress because that works. And I'm proud to say that I had a great working relationship with y'all's Congressman, Jamie Comer, who became a good friend of mine. I'll give you a little sidetrack on Jamie, talk about him. when Jamie and I engaged in this program that brought Democrats and Republicans together, and it was kind of like the Democrat would go to the Republican's district and do a tour of that area, and vice versa. And it's a way in order to kind of like bring people together and talk about the issues. Well, I came back to Western Kentucky to tour Jamie's district, and we went on the boats and learned about, all the Asian carp and invasive species and everything that's impacting the local ecosystem. And Jamie came down to Charleston to learn about flooding and everything that we were facing along the coastal district. But to Jamie's credit, and this is how D.C. works, though, I was a top target for Republicans. And so if the leader, Kevin McCarthy, saw me in Congress, he knew he would not have a chance at being Speaker of the House. So they spend millions upon millions, and there are certain members of Congress who won't even sponsor a bill with you because they don't want to be associated with a member of the other party. And this goes back and forth, Democrats and Republicans, and I'm talking about just from my standpoint. But whenever Jamie agreed to do this trade with me and me come to his district and vice versa, I know for a fact that he caught a lot of hell for that. But to Jamie's credit and his testament, you know, he was going to stand for it, and he was going to honor his word, and he did. And I deeply appreciate that. But that's the kind of leadership that I think not only just Washington, D.C. or Kentucky or South Carolina, across the nation is craving right now. And I announced my bid for governor about a year ago. And I'm currently running against Governor Henry McMaster, who is the oldest governor in South Carolina's history. He's also running to be the longest serving governor in South Carolina history. Nikki Haley was his predecessor in South Carolina. And back in 2016, Henry McMaster was lieutenant governor at the time. And he was the first statewide official to endorse Donald Trump. So when Donald Trump was elected president, he came back to McMaster. He said, "What do you want?" He said, "I just want to be governor." He's like, "How do I do that?" He said, "Get rid of Nikki Haley." So Nikki Haley was appointed to be ambassador to the UN. She left her post. Henry McMaster rises, and he fills her 2 years, runs for election in 2018, gets another 4 years, and now is trying to add another four onto that. But the biggest differences in which we're running on right now are not partisan differences, because you know we're probably as divided as we've ever been as a country right now. And you turn on the TV, you see it on the left and the right. And looking back the last several years, the pendulum continues swinging back and forth, left and right, left and right. At the same time, the partisanship does not get any better. And so what we've been discussing, what we've been broadcasting, is that we cannot simply afford to keep hacking at the branches with our democracy and pinballing back and forth and blaming Democrats in charge when they are and blaming Republicans in charge when they are. The issue, as I see it, is in Washington, D.C., we have people who have been clinging to power for 30, 40, 50 years. And I'm 40 years old. I've got a 4-year-old son right now. We value the service that many of these people have given to our country, our state. However, as my dad told me growing up, said the most important part of being somewhere is knowing when to leave. And they can provide good service and great guidance. However, it's become a stopgap with new generation of leadership emerging. And so we've caused a little bit of some waves by doing that. But that's something I'm used to. My first vote as a Democrat in Congress was to vote against Nancy Pelosi for Speaker of the House. And I was one of the few Democrats that did that. And I did that because I thought we needed a new generation of leadership. Later voted to impeach Donald Trump, not making friends on the Republican side. And then last week or 2 weeks ago, I went on CNN and said that Joe Biden shouldn't run again for re-election because he's too old, in a nutshell. I said it a little bit more tactfully. But you know, most politicians, most people running for office won't say those things because they're afraid of the blowback. And there is blowback. There are people that call you, there are donors that walk away from you, there are people who will call you names. But the fact of the matter is, I'm a Democrat, but I'm not a cheerleader. And I think we need that independent thought and that independent vision. Because if I go around this room, I ask people, you know, what are the five most important things to you? I would get my family, my friends, my job, maybe the Rotary, maybe a dog or a pet. But I guarantee not one single person in this room would say my Democratic Party or my Republican Party. But somehow or another, that little element, the party affiliation, is driving all other decisions that people make, especially when people go into the voting booth. So when we talk about new generation leadership, this is something we've been presenting on its face. And I've been running and putting that out for voters. But it's not good enough to say we just need new leadership for the sake of new leadership. We also need new ideas. And as I, coming from a small town and coming back here and realizing that there are certain companies and jobs that have left and there aren't as many coming in and filling the void, local businesses, small businesses are taking hits. We need to have a vision for the future. And South Carolina, there's a lot of similarities between South Carolina and Kentucky because there's 46 counties in South Carolina, and I'm on a statewide tour. And when I go through these rural areas, I see Dollar General stores opening up and rural hospitals closing down because Medicaid hadn't been expanded. And so what we're presenting, what we're challenging people to think about is what are the jobs of the future? I mean, we're not going to just move away from the current jobs, but we also have to be thinking about what these new jobs look like, whether it be renewable energy resources or tech jobs. There's a lot of rural counties in South Carolina that you don't have access to internet. And when schools went online, that's only as good as the access to internet and Wi-Fi. And so when I think about some of these rural communities and growing up in one and seeing my local grocery store closed and people having to go to Dollar General or dollar stores to get their groceries, I recognize the real impact that has. But I also realize the economic opportunities that have left as well. And one thing we're discussing in South Carolina is making sure that every corner of the state is covered with Wi-Fi access because it's become basically a cornerstone of infrastructure. Whether or not you're going to work, trying to find a job, trying to pay a bill, trying to find a doctor, or going to a meeting, internet needs to be accessible. And when I look at these rural communities where the opportunities have left, if they have strong internet access with the work from home transition that we're seeing, they can become hubs, economic hubs, of companies that may not be brick and mortar. But you can bring people back to these small towns. You can bring their jobs with them and their families. And I feel like people are yearning for that sense of community right now, especially coming out of COVID more than ever. So we need to look at how we can revitalize a lot of these rural towns and create new industries and create jobs in the process. In South Carolina, our education system is one of the worst in the country. And it's mainly because of teacher pay. We haven't shown a deep enough appreciation for our teachers. And anybody who went through this pandemic with a small child sure as hell should have come out of it with a better appreciation for teachers and schools. Because I tell you, having a young toddler, it tried my nerves being home for 2 weeks. But we love our teachers and we need to show that value. The person in the governor's mansion right now has been in politics in one office or another for longer than I've been alive. And respectfully speaking, I feel like he's had his chance. And in the state of South Carolina, I joke, but not joking, we fire football coaches after one losing season. And for somebody who's been in politics for over 40 years and he pulled up his record, and we're last in schools, we're last in roads, we're last in healthcare, what we're challenging people is to think about a new direction and think about penning a new chapter in our state's history. But again, this is not just the state of South Carolina. As we look across this country, when I was in Washington, D.C., I served with Nancy Pelosi, Jim Clyburn, Mitch McConnell, Joe Biden wasn't up there when I was, Donald Trump. All these people in their 70s and 80s, who for the most part have been in there for decades, stopping a new generation from moving up. A new generation of folks who can make decisions and will be around long enough to live with the consequences, who may be able to draw on the experiences and the wisdom of some of these older elected officials, however, but will understand that our economy is changing. Our healthcare system is changing. Our education system is changing. And as the saying goes, you either control change or change controls you. And any elected position we look at, we want them to have a forward-thinking vision. And what are the jobs of the future going to be? How will our infrastructure weave into that? How will our healthcare system weave into it? And every single issue, no matter when I walk into any room, I take questions, whatever questions they have, I can tie that answer back to one of two things: education and healthcare. Everyone that can be working needs to be working. And people need to be healthy and educated to be productive members of society and to be working. And that goes any corner of our country, but especially in South Carolina. So improving our schools by paying our teachers more, retaining teachers, and expanding access to healthcare. In South Carolina, we're talking about expanding Medicaid and telehealth as well. But these need to be the frames in which we look to the future. And so I'll wrap up here, and we'll give you all a chance to ask any questions if you have them. But I want to say just how proud I am to be here as the son of Bill Cunningham. And I think about right now campaigning with my four-year-old boy. My dad drug me across every single county of Western Kentucky. And when I was little, I mean, I guess I'm the only one who would go with him out of five. But he would say, "I'll buy you a blizzard at the end of the trip." And so I would go to any single event, no, the catfish fry or, you know, pig picking or whatever it was in whatever county, as long as I could have that Oreo shake. Actually, I think it was Hydrox at the time. Hydrox shake at the end of the day. I take my son on the trail now, and I'm showing him the same things because I think the respect needs to return to public service, but you also have to have elected officials who command that respect and who will be honest to people and say the things that may not be popular but are true. And somebody who may not be as focused on what their respective party wants, but what's good for the country or what's good for the state. And sometimes those two are not the same. And I also close by saying I appreciate y'all's time. And why you would care about a race in South Carolina, that, you know, that's up to you. But I would tell you this, that we went to a gender reveal party for a friend of mine, Derek McQuigg, who grew up in Lyon County too. And, you know, they're talking about, you know, we're finding out the sex of their baby they're going to have. And they're talking about boy or girl. We found out it's a boy. And everybody was excited. And some of the people were saying the McQuigg name will live on. You know, the parents and grandparents were excited about that. And it's just a name, McQuigg. But what they really mean is that bloodline will live on. Because you know who these people are. These are your neighbors. These are folks you grew up with. And you know their DNA. And you know what they're made of. And this may be the first time you all met me, but you all know where I come from. And you know my bloodline. And you know my father. And I would hope that you would agree with me that we need honesty and integrity reinstilled in politics, whether or not it's in this state, another state, or another corner of our country. And I'm happy to be picking up that mantle and fighting for that in the state of South Carolina. I appreciate your time and happy to open up any questions. Thank you. About D.C. or South Carolina or locally?
Where in the electoral process are you? You're down to the head-to-head competition.
Yeah.
Still in
so we made it to the primary June 14th. It was a five-way primary. I think I got 57%. So past the threshold. And then we'll have our general election in November 8th. Yeah.
So who would you put push behind to go against Joe Biden as the Democratic?
You know, I think we'll probably see the normal slate of folks who ran last time. You know, being in South Carolina, you see a lot of these people come through because we're an early primary state. And so in 2018, when I was running, all these people wanted to come to South Carolina and campaign with me. Mayor Pete was one that stood out in my mind. He's very sharp, very articulate, and probably one of the better communicators, highly intelligent. You know, all the others came through as well. But I hope that we also expand it to see some governors running. You know, when I think about the Democrats that I associated with and felt most drawn to in Congress were the people who fought hard races. You know, you have people like AOC who she won 5,000 votes in a primary, which I'm sure was tough in of its own right, knocking off a long-term incumbent. But I think where the rubber hits the road is, we got to be able to talk to people who may not agree with us on issues and find that middle ground, find that compromise and a way in which to move forward. And Governor Steve Bullock, former governor of Montana, was very impressive as well. He ran for a hot minute. Governor Roy Cooper of North Carolina is another one as well. But, you know, I think it's going to be exciting to see who does step up and who does put their name forward. Yeah.
It seems like a challenge is when you have good people like that on both sides
yeah.
that want to run for president and other high office, but they've got to get over the hump of satisfying the hardcore base on either side.
Yeah.
To the point they can run in the general election. How do you overcome that?
Well, I mean, it's something we just went through with the primary. Is I took staked out some conservative positions in my time in Congress that you know the far left didn't necessarily appreciate. But I think we mistake the loudest for the most popular, I guess. We hear on both sides, the far left and far right, and it's extremely loud. But at the end of the day, when you come down to it, folks want reasonable people and common sense. I think that's true. I know it's true in the Democratic Party, and I believe it to be true in the Republican Party as well. We can't allow ourselves to be defined. I think a vast majority of Americans right now would probably identify as more independent. But we've got a problem where the extremes control, and a lot of that has to do with gerrymandering, in my opinion. Every state, Democrats do it in blue states, Republicans do it in red states, but when every 10 years with a new census comes out and elected officials are drawing lines, they pick their voters, it eliminates competition in a general election so that the person who wins the primary will oftentimes coast to a general election. People will go further and further into their corners. But I think I believe there's still an appetite for it. I've been successful at it in the past. And again, like it kind of stand on a record of what we've been able to accomplish that too. It's not just winning elections. The fact that I was in office for 2 years and I was able to pass more legislation than most of the delegation of South Carolina has in decades, I think speaks to that's a formula that works. And we've been running on, you know, I kind of glazed over it, but we've been running on age limits for elected officials and term limits. And those both serve their own purpose. But a lot of people don't know that airline pilots have to retire at age 65 and that federal law enforcement officers have to retire at age 57. In South Carolina, state judges have to retire at age 72. And so what we're asking people in South Carolina, if 72 is too old to interpret the law in our state, should not be too old to make the law as well. But these are, you know, these are structural and fundamental changes that I feel will breathe new life into our government and also allow for new generations of leadership on both sides to emerge.
Term limits. I heard a fellow speak a few years back over Murray. He was talking about term limits, and he said one thing about it though is if you limit the politicians, the lobbyists stay on forever. What is the influence of lobbyists?
I think it's pretty heavy. It's pretty heavy. You know, the lobbyists will definitely shape and guide legislation and have an impact. I remember being on the House floor, and you have your different groups. You have your NRA, you know, gun advocacy. You have Planned Parenthood. You have, you know, every different issue has a group. And when legislation comes up, they'll say, well, we're scoring you on this vote. Say if it's an NRA and it's a gun legislation, they'll tell the members of Congress they're scoring this vote, whether or not you be A rated or B rated or C rated. And for the politicians, that could impact the spending that group does in the election time, whether or not you all get mailers paid for by group X. That's impacted by the different votes, and I think they have a lot of sway and a lot of. Impact mainly because of how expensive elections have become. And so candidates and members of Congress may be looking and saying, well, you know, can I count on them spending or do I have to spend it myself? And a lot of them will vote in accordance with it. I didn't take money from PACs, so that was easy for me because I just kind of shut the door on it. So it had no impact on legislation. But, you know, and not all groups are bad. You got teachers' lobbies, you got environmental lobbies, you know, you got groups that are advocating for causes that we all care deeply about. But it is an issue, but it's drawn more back to money and politics than anything.
Yeah.
When I was at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, I thought Alabama State was one of the prettiest states mm-hmm. in the United States.
Agreed.
And at that time, it was an agricultural county, mm-hmm. a state. Now I think it's turning toward industrial. Is that what you think is happening in South Carolina?
We're definitely diversifying our economy, which I think is good. No matter where you are, there are some parts of South Carolina that have not. You know, Myrtle Beach relies heavily on tourism, as does Charleston, where I live. But Charleston also has Boeing. They've also have a lot of. We have a what's set to be the deepest port along the eastern seaboard. But diversifying your economy so that it can withstand recessions more easily, or withstand dips in different markets. I think is important, but it has been diversifying. We have, you know, BMW, we have Volvo. I want us to be the largest electric car manufacturer in the entire country, because we got the skeleton of a good infrastructure with the interstate system, but we also have what's going to be the deepest port in Charleston, and so you got kind of the ingredients to make it very successful. I think any state will look at what their geography offers or what their resources offered to determine what fields and what type of economy best suits them.
Is South Carolina a right work state?
Yes. Yep. As is Kentucky too, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You talked about South Carolina's health infrastructure.
Yeah.
Just a current event. How do you navigate between now and November the discussion of Roe v. Wade?
Yeah. Well, elections are choices between two candidates or more. And the choice that voters have right now, Governor McMaster wants to ban all abortions with no exceptions. No exceptions for rape, no exceptions for incest, no exceptions for the life of the mother. And we all know some, and these are very emotionally charged decisions. And there's valid points on both sides that are arguing this. But the vast majority of folks believe that there should be exceptions. If a woman has an ectopic pregnancy, if a woman has a complicated pregnancy where her life is at risk if she chooses to continue with it, most people think that that decision should be left to her. Or if a woman is raped or a victim of incest, and you hear about these heartbreaking stories all the time, Governor McMaster has a different opinion about that. And that's the issue that we're trying to drive home, is how extreme that position is and how unpopular it is. And that's how we're engaging on the issue, though. Well, I appreciate.
He wants to ask about electric cars.
I just wondered your views on, like, going electric and then also on gun rights. You know, I didn't know what your views were.
Yeah. So the, you know, electric cars, this is going to take a while, but I view it as, we got Volvo that's trying to go all electric by, what's 24? I think it's 2030 now or so. And this transition is not going to happen overnight. You know, we're not going to flip a switch. But we do need to be looking to the future and figure out, like, what, you know, as technology advances, you know, I think we have to follow. But it's not going to be overnight. And but if we can bring those jobs, good paying jobs too, and that's the point too. Like, when you talk about bringing jobs to the state, you need the good jobs. There are certain states or certain governors that will just give out tax benefits and tax breaks to any jobs. And what happens if low-skilled jobs come in, sometimes they can do more harm than good. The gun safety issue, you know, I grew up around guns. You know, you go to Lyon County, you go to high school. I remember the days you show up at school and you got people who drove their trucks with their rifles in the back, you know, and they locked their cars. And we know, like, it's, you know, the folks here in this room, I've got a pistol, got my concealed weapon permit, very comfortable around guns. And there, you know, those who are understand the safety behind it and checking your firearms and making sure, you know, check them three times before safely storing them. So, but it's not these people we're worried about. It's the people who are violent, who have mental health issues, and who have rap sheets. They're getting access to guns. And that's where we're trying to focus on. You know, the Charleston loophole, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but if you go to purchase a gun, and most background checks go through instantaneously, like 99%. Small section of them take a little bit longer. If after 3 days the background check does not come back through, the gun seller can sell the gun automatically without a background check. And that's called the Charleston loophole, because a man by the name of Dylan Roof went to get a firearm and background check didn't go through. They ended up selling them the gun. Then about 7 years ago, he walked into Mother Emanuel Church, a black church, and while every head was bowed, he opened up fire on a small prayer congregation and murdered 9 people there. That's called the Charleston loophole. So there's areas in which we can focus on. I mean, this is a very robust issue. It has a lot of, you know, the mental health issue is real. That needs to be addressed. But we should all be making an effort to get guns out of the hands of people who are violent and who have criminal records. And these are areas I think the vast majority of people do agree on right now. And so that's kind of the way in which we steer towards and how to make our community safer. Because in South Carolina, we've got the highest crime rate we've ever had. It's a red state. North Charleston, the city of North Charleston, has a Republican mayor. So this isn't a partisan issue. This is obviously some decisions that are being made that are not having an impact or not having as much of an impact. So there's, you know, finding that common ground where people can agree on that we need to get guns out of the hands of people who are mentally ill or who are violent. We also have major issues with domestic violence in South Carolina, too. And I think one of the highest rates for women being murdered by their boyfriends or husbands, often at times at the hands of firearms. So it's, again, it's not the responsible gun owners that concern me. It's the irresponsible ones where those guns fall into the hands of them. And that's how we talk about the issue, though. I hate to be rude. I should have told you all on the front end. I do have a heart out one. I'm driving to Asheville today with my son. And but I do want to say thank you again for having us. I'm going to make my dad split out here with me with Christian, but I appreciate it. Can't thank you enough. We're online at joeforsouthcarolina.com. We're also on social media in case y'all want to follow us and become updated. I would encourage you to follow along because it's going to be a tough race, but you know, we've seen tough before, and y'all know what we're made of, right? So we'll keep at it. Thank you again. Appreciate it.